You're listening to Good Food on KCRW. I'm Evan Kleiman. Christmas in LA means tamale season. If you drive past Cinco Puntos or Tamales Lilianas on Christmas Eve, you will see a queue of hungry folks waiting for a dozen or more of their favorite flavors, like the red stained tamale rojo or chicken and salsa verde. For other families, tamale season means a tamalada, where friends and family gather to make their own tamales. For culinary anthropologist Claudia Cerato, the tamalada is a yearly ritual. Claudia studies North and Mesoamerican foodways, and food is her way to revitalize ancestral memories. I asked her to start us off with a tamale history 101.
Tamales have been around for a very long time, and they're very significant for Mesoamerican peoples. It has been shown that the actual, before tamales were tamales, the masa, which comes from corn, actually has been dated to 9,000 years ago. So that means that the teocintle, which is the wild version of what has become the domesticated corn, which eventually becomes the masa that is used for the tamal making, in indigenous terms, it has existed since time immemorial. That means that there is no true memory of its origins. However, archaeologists are doing their best to figure this out. So many indigenous pueblos throughout Mexico pretty much came up with their own style of tamales. In Michoacán, they're called corundas. They take on more of a triangle shape. In Mexico City, they are more of the original style of tamal or tamali, which is a Nahuatl word meaning wrapped or wrapped food. So yes, these tamales definitely predate the tortilla. There's always an idea that, oh, the tortilla came first. But the truth is, no, tamales did.
Do they know if they reference any other main material besides corn, or does the word presuppose it will always be corn?
It's really interesting because not all masa comes from corn. Masa has also been made with different amaranths. So there is a black amaranth, there's red amaranth, there's a white amaranth. And that was another grain that was used in the preparation of masa. We also see the same thing, like in South America, with the use of quinoa as the masa for the tamales of those regions.
In the Mesoamerican world, do these amaranth masas still live on today?
Amaranth is actually remembered, and it is utilized and integrated in the making of masa. Now, because this particular grain was deemed unusable by the Spanish during the time of conquest, many folks forgot about the combination and how nutritionally dense it would make the masa of corn. So I myself have learned to bring it back into my tamal making, into my tamal processes. And what I have found that it actually fluffs the masa. So it creates little pockets of air. And so it allows for there to be a fluff as you, cut right into the masa or as you put the masa up into your mouth. It's quite wonderful.
God, I love that. What do we know about how they were made in Mesoamerican times in terms of the process, and were people already filling them, or was it more like a dough?
So in pre-colonial times, the tamales were prepared all year long, and they were not made just as pockets of dough. They were actually filled. They were usually seasonal fillings. So even though, say, it was the springtime, for those that were by the coast, you would see more fish. For folks that were up in the hillside, you would see more rabbit or you would see more deer. And for folks that had no access to large bodies of water, then you would see the tamales filled with different plant relatives. Tequesquite was also used as a riser. Tequesquite is a mineral that comes from the lakes. And it's very rocky and very salty. And so tamales also of pre-colonial times did not contain any lard as we know them today. So the texture was a lot more coarse and dense. So tamales, aside from, fish, aside from deer and rabbit and other wild plants, you also found turkey in them, iguana, even frogs, birds, shrimp, cricket tamales, larva tamales, and then there was avocados, bean, tomato, chilies, and my ultimate favorite, which are cacao, and fruit and vegetables. So tamales weren't limited to like the 4 or 5 tamales like we know them today. And not just that, but also to the method of preparing them. Some were actually placed on top of a comal, just like you would a tortilla. You just keep flipping them and turning them. So those would be considered like comal tamales. And then you also had some that were buried underground. So those were like deep steamed, as we see barbacoa being deep steamed today. There was also other technologies that were made so that you can place the tamales inside over a large burning fire. So they would be tamales al vapor that were cooked over what we would call wood stove today. And so there was a lot of variety. There was a lot of diversity.
Okay, so now let's talk about modern day and people eating and making tamales. It seems like tamales have been pushed into this one time of year.
Really interestingly, tamales are accessible and available year-round. We see this throughout Mexico. We see this throughout Central America, South America. But in the United States, it seems to be a food that most crave during the fall equinox or Christmas time. It's really a time when family is able to come together. And so in my home, this has been since I was born. So for 45 years now, my family continues to honor the tradition of the tamalada. You know, our tamaladas are usually large. There's usually about 20 of us that are doing this work. So, you know, you have the grinders, you have the maciendos.
What is the maciendos?
So, or the folks that are actually preparing the masa. So you're maciándolo, you're mixing it. I don't like to use a mixer for my masa. For me, it takes away that cultural connection. I'm really used to digging my hands in there, mixing it. It's a lot of arm work. And doing that work, it also reminds me of my grandmother. And this is a little emotional for me, but I remember her arms, you know, and I remember looking at them as a child and just mixing the masa. And it almost felt like it was like a never-ending story. I was always so impatient, but patiently waiting for her to stop. Because she said it was something you just had to keep on doing until the masa told you it was ready. You know, so that way it goes on to the next stage, which is, you know, to be able to begin spreading the masa onto the hoja. And so, it's labor intensive, but like that's the point to making the tamales, because it creates unity. It brings us together. And not just that, but it asserts, you know, who we are as indigenous Mesoamerican peoples, still thriving and still surviving in such a beautiful way as we are today.
I know you make these blue corn and bison tamales.
Yes.
Do you make more than one kind? So you do blue corn and then do you do another kind of masa?
Yes. So there are multiple tamales that I myself like to make and my family likes to make. We use, you know, anywhere from white corn, red corn, blue corn. Sometimes some are made with rajas, which is using chile poblano. Those are like one of my favorites. But the ones that have actually become what I want to say my signature tamales have been my bison blue corn. And I specifically use the blue corn because it is one of the corns that has not been genetically modified as many other corns have. I also like this corn because it really complements the braised bison.
Now, after all of this work, When do people like sit down and actually eat it? Is it, are you eating it right after the tamalada? Describe the moment when you finally are, maybe you've taken a shower, changed your clothes, but you've taken a breath and you taste the results of all this labor.
So usually immediately following a tamalada, there are two sessions where one sits down to eat. The first is the taster. So that is when there is a round of tamales, which is usually the first batch, where those that are in the kitchen get to taste. We're, you know, still covered in masa, still with our dirty aprons. We take our first bite. Now, this first bite is a slow bite because the tamale is very hot. The feeling I'm always looking for is that feeling that just makes me just go, oh my goodness. You know, it's a nod. It's a smile. And it's at that point that you freshen up, do what you got to do. And pretty much the tamales are eaten all throughout the day. But at the end of our tamalada, our end of our tamale experience, we always usually save the sweet tamales for last.
That was Claudia Serrato. She's a culinary anthropologist who studies the foods and food ways of Mesoamerica. You can also hear Claudia on Good Foods Masa episode. Have you heard it yet? It's really an amazing show, an hour-long exploration of masa, the nixtamalized corn that makes tamales, tortillas, tlayudas, tetelas, and so many more incredibly delicious items. You can find it at kcrw.com/goodfood. And if you're looking to buy tamales for the holidays here in LA, check out the extensive tamal roundup that I did for KCRW's show Press Play. You can find it on our Instagram page. Follow us at KCRW Good Food.